And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning. Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason scheduled to join us here in just a couple of minutes. And Joe, Derek Mason doing a really cool thing called the Feed Our Heroes campaign, which essentially is just helping businesses out, feeding caregivers and first responders. It's really cool to see coaches and athletes and all these different people, as we're going through the situation with the coronavirus, kind of do their best to help out and spread awareness and do their part that way.
Yeah, and you know, we'll ask Derek about that. I love that it kind of hits two things. You know, obviously our restaurants are hurting. You know, people can't gather in restaurants. You know, any chance you get to get takeout or delivery from a local restaurant helps that. And then, you know, to purchase that for the people on the front lines of this and to also benefit them, I think it's a brilliant idea to kind of do both things. So, you know, kudos to him for doing that. And a lot of people out there doing good things trying to help in this time. I mean, I've been really, as tough as this is, especially, you know, the fatalities and the tragedy of all this, I mean, it has been heartening to see how many people have stepped up and tried to help people.
Absolutely. We have Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach, joining us now here on Morning Drive. Derek, thanks so much for taking the time to come on with us here today. We hope you and the family are doing well during this time.
We are. Joe and Robbie, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So what's this time been like for you in terms of, we were just talking about the Feed Our Heroes Challenge, which is just a great initiative that you put out there. Where did this idea come from, and kind of what have you seen the response that it's been like so far?
Well, me and my wife were, you know, sitting down watching the news, and, you know, obviously, I mean, you're getting a lot of information, but just to see, you know, man, what our caregivers, our doctors, you know, our first responders are really having to deal with and what they're going through, the stress and anxiety of it, and just looking and talking about, you know, what's happening with some of our go-to restaurants. I mean, we've got places that we had, you know, gone to, and some of those places have had to shut down. And we were like, you know, what can we do? So the idea was just born out of, you know, looking at, you know, man, what can we do? Everybody can do something. And so just talked about feeding first responders, frontline people, medical doctors, you know, caregivers, and being able to help these local restaurants, you know, as best we can. But the response has been tremendous. Again, talk to some coaches across the country. I talked with David Shaw out west, Dino Babers up at Syracuse, you know, man, shot something to Dabo. And, you know, man, these guys think it's a great idea. Everybody's community is different. Everybody's getting hit differently. But this it started as a Vanderbilt challenge. Talking with my AD, you know, Dr. Lee, and then, you know, talking to some of our coaches, whether it was Stack or Stephanie or Jeff McDonald or even Tim Corbin, and they were on, and I just wanted to put a broader challenge out there to college coaches across the country. Man, let's be about, you know, doing something, and that really, you know, helps right now. I know we're helping our student-athletes as best we can, you know, because that's the population that we serve for the most part, but there's more out there, so just putting a challenge out there and just trying to get some awareness about it is what we've tried to do, and hopefully, man, we're trying to make a difference.
Yeah, it's really cool, and again, I like how, you know, again, I mean, these restaurants are hurting so much right now, obviously, as are so many businesses, but also, you know, you're hitting that side, and we're also, you know, talking about the first responders, the people on the front lines, helping them. You mentioned go-to restaurants, Derek, so give us a few places that are your favorites, and maybe a few dishes that are your go-tos around Nashville.
You know what? there's so many. This is a foodie town, so you know Nashville's got great food. For me, I mean, if you're talking barbecue, I'm going to stop in the you know, Martin's Barbecue, or go over to, you know, Etley's Barbecue off of 12 South and grab some barbecue. I mean, I looked at Taqueria del Sol and where they're at right now, and they're currently, you know, man, out. But Slim and Huskies, if you're looking for a slice of pizza, I mean, and there's so many, you know, great pizza places. But these are places, man, that are independent, just looking at, you know, man, how we can sort of grab something. But, you know, Adele's is a place that I go to, man, that's a go-to move every once in a while, you know, for me and my wife. as well as getting to the Southern. So we eat at a lot of places, and there are a lot of good restaurants. With all these coaches, you know, been jumping on, especially you know on our staff. We're gonna try to you know touch as many restaurants as we can. So and we're gonna bring something to bring a meal to hopefully some of these you know first responders or you know, medical staff personnel, and hopefully we can put a smile on their face. At least that's what we've heard so far. So let's keep them smiling as they keep working.
Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason on the line with us. And Derek, obviously all of us have been affected by the coronavirus situation in some way, and there are some really serious medical situations going on out there that obviously are top of mind for everyone and are most important in this discussion. But, you know, the college football spring schedule also being affected during this. What are some of the challenges like of not having a normal spring schedule and trying to remain in constant communication with your team?
Well, we've tried to remedy, you know, where we sit by just knowing that our guys are okay. So, you know, safety, health and welfare for student athletes is really important. Most of our student population is residential, so most of our kids are back home. But it's different for every one of those guys. Our student athletes all have different living situations. Most are doing okay. Some are still trying to figure out exactly how to study if you don't have Wi-Fi, or so we're looking to get, you know, Wi-Fi and, you know, to try to take care of that certain segment of the student population. I mean, that's a little different, but you know what? The Zoom meetings have been fantastic. Our ability to have platforms nowadays that can, you know, allow us to, you know, virtually, you know, speak to our athletes. It's been helpful from the mental health side of, you know, what they're going through to just being able to give them words of encouragement and talk ball. I mean, those things are things that they miss. They're getting back to some semblance of routine with online school, but the Zoom meetings have made it, you know, almost, tolerable for our student athletes to be able to go through this and figure out where they can get help from right now.
Obviously, Derek, everybody's, when it comes to just the football aspect of this, spring football and everything, everybody's basically in the same situation. I guess some people got a little more in than others. But for you with new coordinators, is that an extra challenge? I mean, just because I assume there would have been, I guess, maybe more install and terminology stuff this spring than in other springs?
Yeah. You know, only getting four practices in was a bit of a challenge. But I tell you what, it allowed, you know, our coordinators both, you know, Todd Fitch and Ted Roof to do. It allowed them to evaluate our players, okay, to see, you know, in four practices, you were able to see, okay, where guys are, our strengths, you know, what can we build around. And now, you know, as we're going back, you know, with our 2 hours a week of virtual meetings, they're having a chance to, you know, address the film a little bit, talk about, you know, strengths, address the weaknesses, but also talk about where we need to go. And a lot of what we're doing now is more situational football. So, you know, what are we doing at the end of the half? How are we going to defend the end of the half? You know, what are we going to do in a two-minute drill? Just talking offensively and defensively, along with special teams, to try to create football IQ, because that's the greater part of what you can do right now. Just talk about those situations and try to get your guys to understand, okay, man, how would we react? Let's go through these scenarios. And that part's been outstanding, you know, for us. And these guys are continuing to get better. So we can only do so much, but the things that we are doing, I think we're getting better at.
Derek, Joe and I have discussed, and obviously the NFL draft taking place on April 23rd as originally scheduled, we've discussed kind of Keyshawn Vaughn and his NFL future. And I think selfishly we would have both really like to see him here in Nashville as a complimentary piece to Derrick Henry. But regardless of where Keyshawn Vaughn ends up, what are NFL teams going to get if they make the decision to draft him this month?
Keyshawn Vaughn is a warrior. He's a locker room, you know, man, guy who's all about team. And you know, people in Nashville have seen this young man grow up. You understand what he is. I mean, he's an exciting football player. You know, he's a college graduate. He understands how to play the game, and he's really unselfish, you know, when it comes to, you know, what his role will be. If you want him to be a first, second, or third down back, then he'll do it. He'll stand up in protection. If you want to put him in the return game, then he'll do that as well. For him, I think his best football is in front of him because he just has so much more to give. He wants to be challenged at that level. Any challenge that you put to him, then he's gonna be able to meet. And when you watch his game, he got better. You know, when things got harder here at Vanderbilt and he had to run against 8 and 9 man boxes, that's exactly what he did. So his game is going to translate to the next level very easily. And I've had more than my fair share of teams reach out and talk about where he sits right now.
Well, I've got to ask you about, of course, Jerod Pinkney and Kalijah Lipscomb too, Derek. Obviously two guys, I think both of them also we're going to have a chance to do some things on Sundays. What do you think about them in the NFL, and what kind of a reaction have you had about them?
I think it's more of the same. The great thing about these guys, in a shortened time where you don't have a pro day, they go back to your tape. And the one thing about, you know, these two guys, you know, speaking about Jerod Pinkney and Kalijah Lipscomb, these guys have, you know, 4 years of tape. You know, Jared redshirted his freshman year after he broke his collarbone in game one, but played, you know, in 4 straight years. And Kalijah came in and played as a true freshman. So, you know, when you talk about body of work, these guys got body of work. You know, 2019 was definitely not what they wanted, but, you know, both of these guys had things that they needed to work on. Jared came back and worked on, you know, his ability to be an inline blocker. I mean, we saw in 2018 how he was able to go get the football. That's not a problem. But being able to block was one of the questions that NFL teams had about him. And I think as those teams have called, I talked to the Houston Texans the other day. I mean, I talked to their tight ends coach, and he wanted to dig deep. We dug deep, and he came out of that conversation saying, okay, that's what I wanted to know. I talked to the Kansas City Chiefs. I talked to Eric Bieniemy, and their running backs coach, offensive coordinator, and Eric wanted to know about Kalijah. And after our conversation, he said, that's exactly what I need to know. He called me back after he talked to Kalijah, and he said, Mace, he's exactly what you say he is. So I think I'm honest. I'm transparent. These guys have put together a body of work, and now what they got to do is just wait for the draft. Somebody's got to love you.
Vanderbilt right. football coach Derek Mason has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Derek, I think I could speak for the entire city when we just say thank you for what you're doing with the Feed Our Heroes Challenge. It's a great initiative that you and your wife have come up with, and best of luck to you and your family as we all try to get through this crisis together.
John, Robbie, you take care of yourselves. Enjoy your weekend and be safe.
Absolutely. Thanks Derek, for joining us. We appreciate it. Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason has been our guest here on Morning Drive. When we come back, the Houston Astros suspensions that have been dealt out in 2020, could that be canceled? Could those be fulfilled without a game being played at all? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Tim Kirkjian on ESPN talking about the futures of ex-Astros manager A.J. Hinch and ex-Astros general manager Jeff Luhnow, given what happened with the one-year bans that were placed on Hinch and Luhnow by Major League Baseball. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And, Joe, this is a really interesting story because the way it's kind of written and worded from Major League Baseball and Ron Manfred is, you know, even if no baseball is played in 2020, or maybe even if the season is shortened, it's not like there's a specific number of games that have been attached to A.J. Hinch and Luhnow's suspension. So basically what happened is they were given one-year bans and fired right after that in January following the investigation. And that was supposed to have gone through the completion of the 2020 World Series. So it very well could happen where, you know, maybe the MLB comes back in June or July and they end up playing, you know, 60, 70 games, and then a World Series after that. All of a sudden you're talking about maybe 90 games or something like that. And Hinch's and Luhnow's suspension at that point would be up, and they would be free to join other teams after that. So kind of an interesting situation right now to follow with the Astros and Major League Baseball.
And maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but I have a hard time getting outraged about it at this point. You know, I think just given everything that's going on, I mean, they lost their jobs. They have the public shame of this. This will follow them forever. To me, it's not that big of a deal if no season happens and they come back. I mean, I still think the bigger deal is no players got punished. I mean, that's my bigger problem with the way everything went down. But I think I look at this, and I would assume some people do, differently given what we're all in right now.
Yeah, I think there's certainly something to that. And look, I mean, the interesting thing, and you heard Tim Kirchner kind of talking about that in the open there in terms of, you know, what happens if there's no season at all and no World Series gets played. That's when it gets kind of interesting because, I mean, it is worded that the punishments end, quote, following the completion of the 2020 World Series, end quote. Well, if there is no 2020 World Series, there will never be a completion of the 2020 World Series. So after that, if that happens, and that's kind of the worst-case scenario right now for Major League Baseball, going to be interesting to see what Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball decides in terms of the futures for A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow at that point.
I guess you could lawyer that to say you'll never return because it never happened.
Yeah, I guess so.
Sorry, you're just – or you could, like – you know, you could like scribble out the zero and put in a one and just bump it another year, I guess. You know, you could do a number of things. But to me, if it doesn't happen, even though understandably they will not have been punished beyond everyone else, again, I still think losing your jobs, having this be a public thing that you will never totally shake, I still think that's pretty significant punishment. So I would be okay with those guys just, you know, being the ban being lifted after this year, which in that case, of course, would be worst case scenario. And I don't even like thinking about the worst case scenario of zero baseball at all.
Look, I mean, we've talked about this, and obviously there's a ton of things going on right now that are more important than the Houston Astros. From a simple PR perspective, in terms of what's going on, not only with the coronavirus, but in their own city with the Houston Texans trading DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals. Like how much have the Astros gotten off the hook for what we thought, Joe, was going to be a story that stayed around all season long and all summer long and into the fall, even with the Houston Astros and their run in this season. My opinion is that when and if baseball comes back this year, I don't think people are going to think anywhere near enough or as much about, you know, the Astros cheating situation as we thought they were going to heading into the year.
Yeah, I mean, I just think everything has been put into perspective now. So it's, you know, outrage over anything in sports to me has been muted to a point because of, you know, what the fact that we don't have sports at all. So I mean, it doesn't take away that they cheated and that they cheated for a long period of time, extreme example of cheating, and that the way they've handled it since has been unsatisfactory. And, I mean, you know, people should still be upset with them. But, yes, I'm with you, Robbie. I just think that if there's a forum to boo them, you know, then everyone's going to be so happy and hugging each other that they can actually gather and watch a game anymore. That it's just, you know, you're taking some of the venom away. And I think that's human nature. I think a lot of things are going to be viewed a little bit differently once we all get back to life, whenever that may be, or I should say normalcy.
And I totally agree that that's going to be the case from the fans. Like, I don't think they're going to care anywhere near as much. I do wonder about, like, players on other teams because, we hear it all the time and these unwritten rules of baseball and everybody before this kind of coronavirus situation took over, the world of sports was talking about, you know, once the MLB begins, like, or is Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman, all these guys, are they going to start taking pitches off the back of their head like every other game? Like, what's going to happen? I do wonder what the players' reaction will be, if it's still going to have some venom there from a team-by-team perspective.
Yeah, I don't think this will go away completely. I think they'll see some of that for sure. I think they'll see boos. I mean, this is not going to – and the thing is, even as I talk here about a different perspective, I mean, look – eventually we'll also probably all get back to taking everything for granted and for overemphasizing sports and you know, how important it is in the scheme of life. I mean, of course, this is what we do. So we love sports and we're lucky to be able to, you know, write and talk about it. And we want it to be important, of course. But I think, you know, for a while, I think this is going to put things in perspective. And then I think things will eventually go back to how they were. And so, I don't know, maybe this lengthens the amount of time. Like, once it's back to totally normal, like in 2022, then, like, everyone really get mad at the Astros again and take it out on them for a year.
You remember what happened in 2017 with those Houston Astros? We've had enough of it, let me tell you.
I mean, yeah, it's... But I think whenever it comes back, I mean, there will be ramifications still. I think the players in particular, you're right, they're probably less likely to take the foot off the pedal than fans.
I wonder, like, what does the future of A.J. Hinch specifically as a manager, like, I wonder how much interest he's going to garner from other teams once his suspension is up. I mean, because, look, I mean, let's be honest, even with the cheating scandal aside from it, he was still a very good manager. I wonder what the interest level is going to be in him once his suspension is up and he's eligible to return to the game.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you could also, if you wanted to, you know, go against him, you could say, yeah, well, it's not hard to manage a team like that. But he is a good manager. Listen, if Rick Pitino can have a job in college basketball right now, by golly, A.J. Hinch will be a manager again.
I think that's a really good point. Rick Pitino continues to provide hope for us all in terms of the second chances that he continually gets. It's almost an art form at this point by Rick Pitino. It really is amazing.
It is amazing, and it's the ultimate news dump too, to like do it right after, you know, everything gets shut down. I mean, that's probably the only way you could possibly announce that you've hired Rick Pitino.
Yeah. So, good luck to Dusty Baker though. Like, you know, filling those shoes. If the season does resume at some point this year, Dusty Baker coming in there, you know, he's looking at this. If I'm Dusty Baker, like, yeah, I get it. They cheated, and you've got to deal with all that kind of stuff going on and answer questions about that continually. But you look at the roster that they have, I mean, they've got a pretty good chance to compete for a World Series, and obviously Dusty Baker is looking for one of those, hasn't really captured one of those yet. So he's got, I think, a very interesting opportunity when and if the MLB season returns. The Astros are still going to be pretty good.
Yeah, they are. I mean, listen, it's not all the cheating. This is a very, very talented team. Everybody's going to monitor their batting averages, especially at home, very closely. But Dusty Baker, it is. It's a great situation for him, honestly, because he's inheriting a team that can win it. And he's a good guy for this. He's a very likable guy. I think he'll be a guy who'll soften this a little bit. And let's just hope that we have a chance to see it unfold.
When we come back, Derrick Henry signed his $10.2 million franchise tender with the Titans yesterday. What does that mean in terms of a long-term deal? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Field Yates talking about Derrick Henry and the Titans' decision to put the franchise tag on him. Derrick Henry, of course, signing his franchise tag tender yesterday. Good for $10.2 million. Welcome back in to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode there. And Joe, I hear what Field Yates is saying there, and everybody keeps talking about, you know, the not being on the field part of it, you know, whether it's on third down or whatever the case may be. And I hear that and I understand that. Now, the example that Field Yates just threw out there in terms of, you know, being in the AFC Championship game down 14 points in the fourth quarter and Derrick Henry not being on the field, I mean, okay, but, you know, running backs around the league, if you're down by 14 points in the fourth quarter, you don't really need to be dinking and ducking the ball off to your running backs anyway. You need to throw the ball down the field. So I'm not sure how much of that argument for Field Yates I buy in terms of Derrick Henry and the negotiations that the Titans should use from that aspect. That was a little much for me.
Well, but I will say this, though. I mean, if it's Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Le'Veon Bell – although it's hilarious to think of the Jets in the playoffs. But, you know, whatever, in that game situation, they are on the field, and you can dump to them and maybe get a big play out of them, you know, throw the random draw play in, whatever. I mean, I think it does speak to what I do think is the one argument against him at the table, and that is he is a two-down back. And that means, again, that it's not just – that he is not a great pass catcher. I don't think he ever will be. He's great in the screen game, but that's different. It again means that you can't just go with him and then, you know, really just try to back him up. You have to go find someone who can be good in that area. And that usually means more investment, either financially, as in when they went and got Deion Lewis to sort of split things with him initially, or, you know, investing a draft pick, as I think the Titans will do in this draft. So, I mean, it's you're right. That situation is what it is. But still, like, the backs that are actually three down backs are on the field then during a time when you would think that your best players are going to be on the field. This is why, like, we had Teron Davenport on earlier, and he was talking about with these negotiations, he thinks something will happen. I think we do too. I mean, I would lean toward, if I had to guess right now, that something will happen. I think Derrick Henry signing the tender, it lends optimism to that. But I think the idea that Teron said, you know, he wants to beat Ezekiel Elliott's deal in some way, I don't know if that's realistic. And I don't know. I don't like the tag for him in terms of, like, $10 million. I think he's worth more than that. I think certainly he's worth giving some security to and guaranteed money up front and having a front-loaded deal that gives you 2 years of commitment to him. But I don't know that you can go, above what Zeke is making. I would be surprised if that's how it ends up.
I would be too. And if I'm the Titans, like, I look at it and I agree, Joe, like, more than $10.2 million, certainly. But, like, how far do you think John Robinson and the Titans are willing to go in terms of getting up to that Zeke number? Like, is $12 million enough for Derrick Henry to make that decision to sign? Is $13 million? Like, how far do you think the Titans are willing to go up?
Yeah, I don't know. And then where is Henry and the CAA people, and where are they willing to go? I mean, it's going to have to be like a lot of these things. They're going to have to meet somewhere in there. I'm going to stick with my, nod to the past and nod to how the running back position has not at all evolved in terms of pay. You just do the exact same deal you gave to Chris Johnson in 2011. You know, it's like 4 years, 50, whatever it was, like 52, 53 million or whatever, right around there, about 13 a year. And again, I think it's the guaranteed money that matters.
Right.
And as Teron pointed out, actual guaranteed, Ryan Tannehill's deal is 90 million, 91 million, whatever, quote, guaranteed, but they can get out of it after 60, low 60s in 2 years. And I think that's the exact same thing. And you could also do an incentive laden contract. You can do that. You can have some landmarks to hit to bring it up. But I will be surprised if he comes in right at or certainly above Zeke.
What will negotiations with Derrick Henry and future running back deals in the NFL as a whole look like? Here's what former NFL general manager Mike Tannenbaum had to say about that.
What's really interesting about Derrick Henry in particular is last year he had 30% of all their yards from the line of scrimmage for the resurgent Tennessee offense. He's also actually a very good pass protector, so even though he's not your quintessential three down back, he does bring a lot of value. And what's really interesting from a big picture standpoint, the guys already touched on some of these other running back deals that didn't work out, but after Derrick Henry gets resolved one way or the other, there's three great players in Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Alvin Kamara. Those will be really interesting to see what kind of deals they get, because as the market has shown us, there's been such buyer's remorse on these bigger second contracts for running backs.
Yeah, and it is interesting, Joe, as Tannenbaum points out there, like, those three guys that he brought up in Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Alvin Kamara all do things differently than Derrick Henry does, which I think is another part of what makes this situation with the Titans and Derrick Henry so unique. I mean, Derrick Henry is such a huge part of their offense and specifically the running game, and Barkley is too, to a degree, in New York, but he's also, very active out of the backfield catching the ball. Like, they operate differently than Derrick Henry does, which I think, you can make an argument that works against Derrick Henry, but then you look at the stats that he threw out there as well in terms of the usage rate Derrick Henry has, just what an impact he has on their total offense from the running game. It's just, I think, such a unique situation from the running back position in today's NFL.
Exactly. And that's why, again, and it's going to happen every time you bring up these recent deals that have gone bad. I mean, look, it's just reality. It's going to be brought up every time when you talk about Derrick Henry's contract and with these guys. You know, all those guys who were mentioned, they could use like another 1,500-yard, healthy, dominant season from Derrick Henry this year, you know, to show you, hey, every running back is not the same, and some right. do work out. But I think with Derrick Henry, the two-back thing gets countered by, yes, overall importance. Again, I just think when you look at two playoff games and how the Titans won those games, it was absolutely all centered around Derrick Henry. I mean, he dominated two playoff road wins at New England and at number one seed 14-2 Baltimore. I mean, that to me speaks louder than anything, along with the durability factor, which we've talked about too. You know, one hamstring game that he sits out and he comes back and is the first back to ever go for 183 games in a row. All of them must win, a must win to get in the playoff, and then two playoff wins.
Joe, as you look at those three guys that Tannenbaum brought up there in Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Alvin Kamara, which one would you be most comfortable giving a long-term deal to? Because I think most people's easy answer would be Christian McCaffrey, just because I think a lot of people feel like he's the most complete back in the league. But we did have David Newton on, who covers the Panthers for the ESPN a couple weeks back, and brought up the fact, you know, McCaffrey's taken a lot of hits in his career. There's a lot of wear and tear on his body so far through his career with the Panthers. Of those three, which one are you most comfortable giving a long-term deal?
That's a great question. I mean, I think McCaffrey is the quintessential modern back, and he's so good in the passing game. But you know, I mean, so is Kamara. I mean, he's really good. He has not, you know, Kamara has not had to have the kind of wear and tear. You could say he hasn't, I guess you could say he hasn't proved he could be, you know, the standalone back. You could also say it's nice to have a little more tread on the tires. I might go to Barkley, though, because I just think he's an unbelievable talent. I just think Saquon Barkley is the complete package as a running back. So I think I would go there. I think I would go with just the pure, most talented guy of the three, and I think that's Barkley.
You know, the tough part for Barkley is, though, like, especially if you're a Giants fan, like, you look at their roster right now, and I think we'd all agree they're still a few years away from being competitive, and that's if Daniel Jones works out. We don't know whether or not he's going to at this point. By the time that they're good, I mean, he could be, you know, towards the back half of his productivity in terms of his career, just with how much they're using him, how much they're relying on him. Like, you know, you could waste the really good years of Saquon Barkley's career there in New York and really not have anything to show for it.
Yeah, you could. But, I mean, in this league, I mean, look at the Titans. You know, what are they, 5-27? And they look, I mean, going into 2016 offseason, I'm sure that's what people said too, right? They're years away from being competitive. And the next year they're going to Jacksonville to win the division. So you can rise quickly in this league to competitive. The hard part is going from competitive to, you know, upper echelon. So, you know, the Giants could get to a decent spot relatively quickly. I mean, I still feel better about them. And if we're going to compare, I feel better about them than the Jets. They got that going for them.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's always a good thing to have going for you, to be in a better spot than the New York Jets. When we come back, the Basketball Hall of Fame finalists have been announced. They'll be enshrined tomorrow. Who do we think is getting in? We'll talk about that next as we wrap up the show. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, the 2020 Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class will be announced tomorrow. Now, Joe, this was originally scheduled to take place in Atlanta as a part of the Final Four. Now, as we know, the Final Four not taking place continues to be just such a sad situation to know that we could have had Final Four basketball this weekend, Joe, and now we don't have anything. It's just tough.
Thanks for the reminder, man.
Yeah,
I was just
forgetting.
By the way, you know, Pearl Jam was supposed to be last night, but at Bridgestone. Sorry. Now I'm sad.
Now we've got more of a reality check on it. But look, it's okay. The Hall of Fame class still going to be announced. We're going to move forward here. and see what's going to happen here with the Hall of Fame. And you look at the nominees, and look, Munson, I think you would agree with this too. There are three just absolute guarantees coming out of the NBA, I think, with Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. All three of those guys, first ballot Hall of Famers, no question about it, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty, and not even just them. It's I think there's five, like, automatic first ballot
Tamika
Hall of Famers.
Catchings, yeah.
Tamika Catchings and Kim Mulkey. Like, those are five easy.
Do we not think Swin Cash is a slam dunk?
That's gonna be the one that, because they're gonna have to event, they can't just bring in all of them. So that's gonna be one that's unfortunately taken out. Same thing with Chris Bosh. Like, I like Chris Bosh. I told Robbie this. I think Chris Bosh is a Hall of Famer, but he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. I know he had complaints about it like a couple months ago of like he really wanted to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he's just not, and that's unfortunate. But next year he will probably be the headliner of it, because next year it's probably going to be him, maybe Paul Pierce, but Paul Pierce is not a first ballot Hall of Famer either. And then maybe Chris Webber finally gets in, or some of these guys that's been in there for a while that may finally get in, but he will be one of the guys that headlines that whole ordeal next year.
And the other thing with Bosh is, like, you're coming in with Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. Like, that's just a tough draw right there too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is.
You know, there's a lot of people. I mean, Chris Webber, that's a good one to bring up. Someone who, you know, you would think would at some point get in there. You know, locally, Rick Byrd is the North American. He's one of the nominations, the North American Committee. I don't know, you know, when or if, but I do think Rick Byrd has a really good case. You know, I think with Rick Byrd, and I think Don Meyer. I mean, locally, I think there are two coaches from Nashville who I think absolutely have resumes that can stack up here. You know, Don Meyer was the winningest coach until Mike Krzyzewski took that over, but he passed Bobby Knight back when he was still coaching before he passed away. So I think Meyer and Meyer should be in the mix. I'm glad Rick Byrd is in the mix. It's one of those things. I mean, there's other contributors too that sometimes get overlooked. I mean, even like a Marv Albert, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different angles to this.
Well, I think this year the nominees for the media is Michael Wilbon and Mike Breen, if I'm not mistaken. So I think those two will get in.
Yeah.
But another guy too, maybe not locally, but still kind of ties into Kentucky, is Eddie Sutton, who's also on this list as well. You know, Oklahoma State, you know, great coach there. Arkansas, at Kentucky as well. He's already in the College Basketball Hall of Fame, so it would make sense for him to get in this one as well. So I think he's also a guy that's going to be probably announced tomorrow, but wouldn't be shocked if he did, because it's such a loaded class.
Yeah, and that's what Eddie Sutton, that's a good example. You know, I think largely when coaches go in, usually it is high major coaches who have, you know, been to Final Fours, won national championships, things like that. That's where, you know, obviously people like Rick Byrd, Don Meyer, there's people that just frankly don't know them as well. But I do think that coaches at, you know, lower levels still deserve recognition and deserve people to really consider what they've done. And I also think that if you're judging coaches, you know, you can't just judge coaches against each other. You can't just judge achievement. I think you also do look, like in the case of Rick Byrd, you know, you're talking about probably the most impressive all-around program over the past 20-plus years in terms of being well-rounded academics. I know most people voting for this are like, it's a basketball Hall of Fame, man. Like,
right.
What did you win? Who did you play? What did you win? And I get that. But I think that when we judge coaches, we should put value on that stuff. If we're going to complain about coaches who run, you know, dirty programs and their players don't go to class or whatever, then why don't you value coaches who do the opposite?
Well, see, what's crazy about that, Joe, and it's kind of sad that they don't look at it that from the player's perspective, because, look, I love Tracy McGrady, but he's not like a Hall of Famer. Like, it's just kind of hard to debate whether or not he's a Hall of Famer or not. Like, he was really good, like a really great player. Like, at the time, he was one of the best, like, in as far as scoring's concerned. But Hall of Famer right now, like, he got in pretty early. Like I think he was maybe a second ballot Hall of Famer. And so I don't think he should be in. I don't think he should be in now. Like not right now. Not over some guys that are still waiting in the wing.
Yeah.
You know. So like it's tricky because they don't never look at that winning mentality that you got to win championships or you got to do this, have an impact on the league if we insert you as a player. But for a coach, it's different. Like you have to have all these achievements that, you know, because Eddie Sutton's a guy who has plenty of achievements. And so it doesn't fall that way with the players, and that's kind of an unfair treatment, to be honest with you.
Well, I think in basketball too, I think that I understand that offense is the name of the game and scoring numbers, all that, but I mean defense is half of the game of basketball. Every player on the basketball court plays offense and plays defense. And if you're great at defense, I think that gets undervalued too.
Just another reminder that, you know, it's really going to be really tough, you know, to hear this announcement tomorrow. We all know Kobe Bryant's going to get in, and for him to not be here and react to it and eventually give his speech at the Hall of Fame, just a tough pill to swallow. I used to enjoy watching Kobe speak. Every time he spoke, it was always entertaining. I was really looking forward to his Hall of Fame speech, and to not be able to have that is just really tough.
Which reminds me, like, could a year suck more than 2020 has so far?
I know.
I don't think it could. It's the worst year ever.
Yeah, it's been, and we're only in April.
And of course, I say that as someone who hasn't, you know, there are people alive who went through, you know, the Depression and World War II and things like that. But in my experience, man, I don't think this will be touched.
Munson, we got a big event coming up this weekend with WrestleMania. For those of us who have never watched a single wrestling event in our entire lives, sell me on it.
All right. Here's how I'm going to sell you on it. Don't watch it. Don't. Because this is your first experience at wrestling and at WrestleMania, it's going to be a lot different than normal. I would advise you to watch an old WrestleMania before getting to this WrestleMania.
Okay.
Because if you go into it watching this and this being your first wrestling experience or your first WrestleMania experience, they recorded this last week because they had to. Because if they didn't, I think they filmed it in Orlando, and now Orlando has the, you know, stay-at-home rules just like everybody else does. So now they can't record or do things live, so they have to record things. So they're going to kind of make this like a movie kind of deal. Like, it's going to look like a movie. It's going to look a lot different than a normal live wrestling event would normally look like. So I wouldn't advise you to watch this and going into it not watching anything else. So I would advise you to watch like WrestleMania 17, which was probably the first big WrestleMania spectacle outside of WrestleMania 1 and 3. So I think watch WrestleMania 17 because those are great wrestlers on there. Stone Cold's the main event. Stone Cold and Dwayne The Rock Johnson's the main event of that. So watch that. Watch some other WrestleManias before going into this one.
Rex Road, very quickly, are you going to be watching WrestleMania this weekend?
I'm not, but it's good to know that the Florida governor who dragged his feet and let people pack the beaches at least gave us a WrestleMania before it was too late.
Absolutely, no question about it. Well, that's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. Joe, hope you and Munson have a great weekend.
You too, buddy.
Absolutely. We'll be back on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.